ShoeCast! Welcome back to the Stitch Down ShoeCast, where we talk quality footwear, how it's made, and all the things that we love about it. I'm Ben from StitchDown.com, and we've got esteemed bro scientist Ticho Blanco here for yet another shoe bag episode, where we answer all your questions about shoes and boots and leather and, I don't know, speed hooks and what else do we answer questions about?
Shoe bags?
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about shoe bags in the short term here. And then we even answer the transparent jokes from listeners that are intended to frustrate us because we are unflappable. What's up, Ticho? What are you wearing today? And more importantly, have you tried any new snacks recently?
Ben, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for asking. Today I'm wearing, I have my Knicks derbies on right now. Brown wax flesh. You know, trying to beat the heck out of this wax flesh. I picked up some kilties from our buddy at Nerdin with Boots. He made me some, like, a custom derby kilty tongue thing so that it, like, you know, doesn't stick out the top. It's pretty tight.
Love Nerdin. Nobody has that space on lock until now, which I love. Kilty game.
Kilty game is on point. In terms of snacks, I did eat two hot dogs right before we started this, so nothing makes me more amped up and ready to go than some processed meat, you know what I mean?
New snack for you, I see. All the hot dog stuff before was just you trying to be cool and impress people, and congratulations on your first two hot dogs. Must feel great.
It feels excellent. I will say, like, sometimes I wonder, like, how many hot dogs have I cooked in my life? You know what I mean? I wonder about that because I worked at this hot dog restaurant for, like, a few years where we're cooking, like, I don't know, a couple hundred of them a day maybe. And I worked there for, like, I don't know, like, 4 years. And then I cook a lot of hot dogs for myself. So I wish I could, like, replay my life and just run a tally on how many hot dogs I've cooked in my life. It's probably a really high number. And I wonder, you know, where do I rank in the world hot dog? You know, like, I'm not Joey Chestnut Kobayashi level of eating them, but, like, am I on their level of cooking them? Who's dealt with more hot dogs, me or Kobayashi? You know what I mean? I want to know.
Kobayashi, a dear old friend of mine, who I actually did probably my greatest interview, excluding every guest that we've ever had on this show, because he was coming out with a new t-shirt line. One of the t-shirts said, Kobayashi ate my homework. That was the one that I got. A Kobayashi Banzai was another one.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, really hype stuff.
So wait, you've met Kobayashi?
Yes.
Is he super cool?
He spoke through an interpreter. He was extremely serious. We were asking him all these questions about, because he had a publicist and they're trying to promote these t-shirts, and that's why the interview happened. And we're asking him about the t-shirts and the design and, like, his fashion, and, like, he didn't want to talk about it and was stone-faced. And then as soon as we started asking him questions about eating hot dogs and then what happens after you eat 80 hot dogs in 12 minutes on the other side, he was just ebullient and couldn't wait to tell us that it comes out looking very strange. But, like, that's when he started grinning. This was after he was super jacked because he sustained a jaw injury in hot dog eating competition and had to stop working out because when he was benching, and he used to be able to bench like 425 or something insane.
Yeah, he's super ripped.
He would, like, grind his teeth too much or, like, grind his jaw. It was endangering his hot dog eating ability. So he had probably dropped like 40 pounds. He's not very tall. But yeah, he was a lovely man. And I'll just say gray sludge is what happens. For like a couple days later, might be like 5 days later, your body has no idea what to do with it and then just like gives up and sends it all out.
Wow. Well, I actually had a run-in with some Japanese competitive eaters as well. And I have a link to this video, but I did appear on Japanese television serving hot dogs to Japanese competitive eaters. Have we talked about this on the podcast before?
I think so. We might have talked about the first part too, but I don't care.
But like, those people are super jacked. When people say like, oh, it's not a, you know, they're not athletes, they're just, you know, they're fat people stuff in their faces. You don't know anything about what you're talking about. These people are crazy fit. Like, their abs are insane because it's got to, like, contain all those hot dogs, you know, and, like, push it out your butt as a gray sludge, apparently. I couldn't be more impressed with the with competitive eaters. I think they're underrated folks.
You're 100% right, and that's why Eric Badlands Booker, another competitive eater slash New York City subway conductor that I've spent some time with, is not at the top of those lists because he's like, he could easily be 500 pounds. He's like 6'7", and a slightly different ab situation going on. If he ever got it together, he could rise to the top. More competitive eaters that I'm familiar with. Eater X, the guy who paints his face. I was like in this local pizza place in the East Village in New York that was like right around the corner from me. I'm like, where do I know this waiter from? And somehow I put it together. Like, I guess I just started doing different things to figure out, including picturing my waiter with like hot dog eating war paint on his face. I was like, oh shit, that's Eater X. And I asked him about it. I told him I was very fond of his work. Confirmed that it was him. You know, they're just out there conducting trains, bringing me pizzas so they can entertain us on one day a year for the casual fan. But competitive eating YouTube, I'm sure it's booming right now.
There's definitely a lot of weird food stuff on YouTube. I don't really want to watch anybody eat. You know what I mean? I go out to dinner with my wife. I look at my own food. I don't watch her eating. I'm not interested.
Don't you dare. We feel a little bit differently about that. I like attended the event on the 4th of July one time. The year that Kobayashi came back like in protest after being banned for I don't remember why. And there was like a whole fucking scene.
I know what you're talking about.
It was crazy.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was like one of the bigger happenings other than just eating hot dogs and hot dog eating history. I was there, man. Live to tell the tale.
I would go to that. I would go to that for just the spectacle of it.
It's actually pretty fun.
I don't want to watch people eating. Like, the actual act of them. Kobayashi is obviously, like, poetry in motion. I get that. Just, like, technically perfect at eating hot dogs. I still don't really want to watch it.
It's pretty fun. And then afterwards, what do you think you do?
Go get a hot dog. You got to.
It's great. I got a corn dog. Got a cheese dog.
Yo, can I make a confession right now?
Why not?
Never eaten a corn dog.
Well, you never ate a hot dog before this morning, so it's not crazy. Just you wait. You're going to love it. All right, we probably should answer some questions from people other than ourselves. But before we get to that, we just need to thank our lovely sponsor this week, Grant Stone, who, I must say, has some of the better shoe bags in the game. They really do.
Yeah.
They're nice. Also, their shoes and boots are fantastic. I'm wearing my coffee suede triple E diesels right now, which I'll talk about a little later in the episode. So get ready for that. Grant Stone. And of course, you don't need reminding about the stitched-down patina Thunderdome, but I'm going to do it anyway. The Dome starts October 1st, and to win almost $15,000 in prizes, mostly boots, all you have to do is wear other boots or shoes really good and hard and lovingly for 7 months, and then take some pictures and share them with the Stitched-Down Premium Discord community, who will express their love and appreciation for your style and fortitude. It's going to be fantastic. Details are all on stitchdown.com, and the entry portal is open right now, like as of, I don't know, an hour ago. So get on in there. Can't wait to see you. All right, Ticho, shoe bag. As always, we've got some amazing questions, and let's tee them up, fumble through some answers, hopefully be treated to some Ticho's Bro Science Theater if we're lucky. Let's go, huh?
Let's do it, man. What do you got?
This is a good place to start. Preferences on structured versus unstructured toe boxes, in parentheses, pros and cons.
So, I have some of both. I would say generally I prefer a structured toe. Really what you're doing with the unstructured toe is you're looking for that collapse. It's basically an aesthetic choice, right? You're looking for that really good, it's all collapsed down there, it's real slim, right on top of your toes even. That's actually the thing I don't like, is I don't actually like when the leather collapses down and it's just sitting on top of my toes. I'm not a big fan of that. It's not always, like, so egregious on every pair.
That's the thing. Like, the look, I mean, especially for pictures when you're not wearing them. Fuck, a really nice unstructured toe on the right last with the right leather just looks so cool. When you're wearing them, you can't even tell quite as much because you're not really looking at that side profile unless you have a really oddly shaped body. But yeah, it's the uncertainty of how that collapse is going to go. And I've got some pairs where it's perfect and it's extremely comfortable and it feels no different. And some pairs that I've experienced, I think at least one of which I don't have anymore, that it changed. You put them on in the beginning, you're like, they fit great, let's go, and then they just change. But yeah, again, that all depends on like leather. Is it lined? You know, what's the pattern? It's tough to say, but aesthetically, a really, really nice unstructured toe, especially a plain toe, to me is kind of one of the more beautiful things in boots. But form, function, you don't always have to pick, but you don't always know what you're going to get with unstructured. Some people swear by it. It's like all they want to do, which I respect.
I've got a bunch of pairs unstructured that I love. I probably have more pairs that are structured that I'm pretty happy with how that's going. I think for me, it's just purely stylistic. Does it fit with the overall look of the boot that you're going for? You know, I would say take a look at like at Brass Tokyo Clinch Boots Instagram and see some pretty much the best examples of unstructured toe collapse and, you know, just what that look can do for you. I would say more often than seeing stuff like that, you see stuff where there's just kind of like some weird creases up there or some weird puckering, or it really depends on the leather, the maker, whether or not it's going to be a win, or maybe you might regret that a little bit. Think hard about the structure of your toes, I guess would be my point.
Yeah, and honestly, to keep going on this, the construction makes a difference. Like, I feel like a lot of this was ushered in at least somewhat by some of those early Viberg 2030 unstructured service boots, like Andrew Chen from 316's boots specifically, because you look at them, you're like, I want it. I want that. And I'd be lying if I said I know everything about why this is the case, but the way stitch down construction is done versus Goodyear well construction, the stitch down can actually support itself a little more, you know, with a lined vamp, better than certain Goodyear well constructions. And, you know, I think that applies to, like, other similar constructions, including Veltschone. You want somebody who does it a lot, right? And, like, I think that's why the clinch stuff is so good. Because from day one, they're like, this is this old, worn-in, vintage look that we're going for. And we're going to kind of build the boots in certain ways around the idea of how these toes and these vamps are going to look. And you can see that, like, with their engineers and, like, just the way that those vamp rolls come in. It's not accidental. Somebody who has some experience with it and, you know, went wrong a couple times and made a couple tweaks and figured out how to do it, I think that's pretty important too.
Agreed, man. That all sounds right. Speaking of Thunderdome, which I guess you probably mentioned at the top of this, I was not paying attention. I was eating some Keebler toast and peanut butter crackers.
Thunder crackers.
Keebler, the official cracker of Stitched Down Thunderdome.
Keebler fresh.
But yeah, I'm actually almost certainly going to enter some clinch engineers as my pair in the Thunderdome. And a big reason why is because it doesn't have a structured toe. It's going to get some wild rolls. It's going to achieve a pretty distinct look, right? Which I guess for something like Thunderdome, you kind of want something that's going to like stand out a little bit. So I'm like super stoked about that. I'm real excited for those.
I'm stoked for you.
I got to try them on because I was out at our friend and sponsor Standard and Strange. I was out at their shop. I got to go in the back and they were like, oh yeah, like we already got some of these in, and they let me like try them on and they were super awesome. I'm very excited.
I'm a little jealous
that I got to go in the back at Standard and Strange.
Yeah, that's the jealous part. Yep.
This is the craziest thing about Standard and Strange that I've never heard anybody mention before. But so if you walk out, there's like an alleyway behind the building that they're in. And there's like this, right next door is like this really good pizza place. And then on weekends, they like grill burgers. You can walk out the back. Well, if you work at Standard and Strange, I guess, you can walk out the back door and you're behind the guy grilling the burgers. And you can walk out there and just, and apparently Neil sits back there and he just like opens the door and is like, orders a burger. And then they like knock on the door and bring him a burger. And these burgers were like fantastic. It was awesome. So that's my secret Standard and Strange tip. It's like, go on a weekend, say what's up to Neil and everybody there, then sneak out the back. Well, they probably won't let you sneak out the back, but walk around the building, go get one of these burgers.
This just got more complicated.
It's a little complicated.
Which way do I walk?
I don't remember.
That is a pretty good back room, back door scene. I was expecting that you were just going to say it was Jen in front of like 15 mirrors, just like looking beautiful.
it's hard to take your eyes off of Jen. I will say that he's an absolutely beautiful man, both inside and out. He couldn't be a nicer guy.
Go Jen.
I was a little intimidated to meet him because
surely
you see him in the photos. I know he's a trickster with all these facts that he's giving us.
He's an Adonis.
One of the kindest people I've ever met. He was wonderful. Love that guy.
Unsurprised. Somehow I haven't met him. All right. Semi-follow-up question here. Different listener. So everybody's in tune. Stitchdown versus Veltschon. They look the same. Why? Just the letter Y. This one we are going to outsource to our friend Lars from Us Moo Boots, who actually worked on an article with me on stitchdown.com called Ask Lars, what's the difference between Stitchdown and Veltschon construction? It's like fairly technical. So Lars is going to be better at explaining it than us. And also he includes some really, really cool pictures of these old Lotus Veltschon shoes that he tore apart. So it's worth it. But it's highly informational. Thank you for setting up the plug to send everybody to stitchdown.com. Wonderful listener. All right, this is a fun one. What are the metaphysical differences between Oxfords and Derbies?
Let me just make sure I have a good working definition of metaphysical.
Definition one, relating to metaphysics. There you go.
Yeah, I just got the same definition. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
All right, I like this one. Derived from the Greek metaphysika, after the things of nature, referring to an idea, doctrine, or posited reality outside of human sense perception. In modern philosophical technology, metaphysics refers to the studies of what cannot be reached through objective studies of material reality, which actually really makes this question fucking perfect.
All right, I think I understood the question.
We know the physical differences. Right. What are the metaphysical differences?
Exactly. Well, I feel like, and I've got grabbing a pair of Derbies, grabbing a pair of Oxfords.
Do not bring material reality into this explanation, whatever you do.
I feel like all discussions of metaphysical things need to be grounded somewhat in the physical, right?
Bullshit.
I took one philosophy class in college and I dropped it on the first day because there was like one annoying kid in the class that just like obviously was way too into this stuff and was like getting into weird debates about probably like metaphysics and stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to eventually throw something at this kid. And the professor seems to be into it. This is unacceptable. And I dropped the class. So I don't know anything about philosophy.
I did the same exact thing with astronomy class freshman year of college. It was because it was 100% about actual physics, which I was not interested in studying or understanding in the least. I thought it was going to be like, I don't know, fucking constellations or
like moons and yeah, like movement.
Something cool.
So I did take astronomy in college because the community college that I attended had a planetarium and I was like, oh, I'm gonna get to just hang out at the planetarium. We went to the planetarium once.
Did you get astronaut ice cream?
No, they didn't even have astronaut. Even if they had it, I wasn't gonna eat it. Do you know that they only used astronaut ice cream on one trip to space and all the astronauts hated it and so they never used it ever again? That's true.
I didn't want to hear that at all.
I'm really sorry to tell you that.
I kind of like it.
I know you do like it.
I like throw out the strawberry part, but I don't know.
It's not good.
It's because I loved it when I was a kid at a planetarium who was obsessed with space, not because it's any good, but now nostalgia.
I don't really understand the whole freeze-drying thing. I have a neighbor who, he's always talking to me about how he wants to buy this $3,000 freeze dryer, and I'm like, why? And he's like, yeah, you know, like the astronaut ice cream? And I'm like... You just want to make homemade astronaut ice cream for $3,000? And like the headline is, you can make astronaut ice cream. Sorry, dude, but I'm not in on that.
That stuff's pretty expensive, so it would probably only take like a decade to pay it off. But think about all the ice cream, like actual good ice cream you'd be ruining.
Exactly.
And like, how do you cut it into a rectangle? Ice cream.
I assume with a knife. Well, I assume they just make it in like a mold or something.
So this guy's going to have to invest in, like, a mold system?
Well, he's not trying to sell it. He's just trying to... Although he was telling me that you can buy... He's like, yeah, I just buy, like, freeze-dried gummy worms and stuff on eBay. Because other people have bought these $3,000 machines, and they have to pay it off because they realized it was a terrible idea to buy it. And so they're just freeze-drying stuff and throwing it on eBay. I'm like, what a mess. Just don't do that. Just don't even do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
Anybody who wants to buy a freeze-dryer, please talk to me first, and I'll talk you out of it.
buy like multiple pairs of really nice boots. Think this through, people.
Yeah, if you're trying to drop $3,000 on something you don't really need, I got a lot of better options for you. Most of them are boots, but come on. Would you rather have $3,000 worth of freeze-dried candy and stuff? And it gets all weird, because he showed me YouTube videos of like what this stuff looks like. Like, you freeze-dry the gummy worm, it gets huge. It becomes this huge gummy worm.
I'm interested again.
But it's crunchy. You still interested?
Yeah, well, I'd have to try it. I'd have to try it.
It looks terrible.
All right, I'm reeling this back.
All right. What was the question?
Before we start looking up YouTube videos of gummy worms that I
He sent me the video. I have it in my text with him.
All right, send it to me when we're done taping. Metaphysical differences. So I've actually, while you were doing all that freeze-dry jabbering, I think I got something here.
Oh, okay.
Physically, we know the difference between an Oxford and a Derby, right? An Oxford, at its simplest, has a closed lacing system. A Derby has an open lacing system. Metaphysically, I think it's that any shoe that is fancier than the shoes that everybody else is going to be wearing can be considered an Oxford, which explains the kind of Pacific Northwest work Oxford world, right? Like, oh, here comes the boss. He's wearing those fancy Oxfords, which are not Oxfords, but they considered them to be Oxfords because on a metaphysical scale, they were outclassed. The guys in, like, the big heavy boots, right? What do you think?
I'm going to say that the metaphysical difference is the vibe that they put out, right? You wear a pair of Oxfords, they are explicitly dressy. You see somebody wearing them, you're like, is this guy some kind of like old-timey lawyer or something? There's no confusing it for something that's casual. It is an Oxford. It is a dress shoe. If you ask a child to draw a picture of a dress shoe, they will probably draw... Well, actually, they'd probably draw a Derby, right? Cut that out.
I'm not cutting that out.
Let me think about what my kids draw. Oh, yeah, they're like really more like Derbies, aren't they?
Yeah, just go to the fridge. Look at all those shoe pictures that they've been...
I gotta go. Well, that's what they're drawing.
Shoe picture homework.
Yeah, they draw what they draw what they see, right? My kid did do a painting of...
Freeze-dried Sour Patch Kids.
You can get that. That's a thing. They're huge. They're huge and crunchy, though.
I'm back to interested. I really am.
I'm so not interested in that. It just looks terrible.
Let's focus on the metaphysics here.
Let's get metaphysical. Yeah, I feel like the metaphysical difference is just that an Oxford is explicitly dressy, whereas a Derby is like only assumed to be dressy, right? Like most people wearing like a casual Derby, the context that we have of kind of this whole world of shoes, we see it as like, oh, it's kind of a mid-casual. It kind of blends both ways. You have some options. You could dress it up. You could dress it down. But for most people, you're just going to look at it and you're going to say, like, oh, it's also a dress shoe. You know what I mean? Imperceptibly, in the back of their heads, they know that it's less dressy than an Oxford somehow, right?
If they're next to each other. Yeah, for person on the street, I think if you put them next to each other, you're like, that's the dressy one. But I wear, you know, long wings with suits, which is in the old days you weren't supposed to do. But again, kind of back to my original point, because most people are out there wearing terrible shoes. Congratulations to all listeners who are not. They're the flashiest shit that's at the wedding, you know, including people who are wearing like bad $120 Oxfords from DSW. So metaphysically, they're actually Oxfords in that particular instance in the eye of, you know, an untrained beholder, right? Something like that?
Yeah.
I think we're getting somewhere. We might need to develop this. True theory takes decades to develop, and we will do it.
Anyone who is into, I'm sort of like somebody like, you know, the soul professor or somebody who knows about some of this stuff will like send us some light reading, preferably a Wikipedia page about metaphysics. We'll dig in deeper on the metaphysical differences between different shoes, because that seems like honestly kind of interesting. I'm kind of intrigued about thinking about, you know, what are the different properties of these shoes that are, you know, kind of go beyond what you can see, what the physical appearances are? What other properties do these things have? Because they have other properties. I believe that. So, yeah. Good question. Whoever sent that in. Intriguing.
I love that question. Thank you, listener. All right. Another related question. We're really flowing here. What's the best rugged derby shoe besides Viberg's? Notice how they didn't call them Oxfords. Although Viberg does have a derby shoe, but you get the point. This person's thinking physically, not metaphysically. We still love you.
So the question was rugged Oxfords or rugged derbies?
Rugged derbies.
Okay. You know, I have these Knicks on right now. They're like the Knicks Comstock. It is pretty much everything you want in a work shoe, in a, you know, rugged derby like that. I'm a big fan of them. I've been wearing these things for 8-9 months, something like that at this point. And they've broken in pretty nicely. They fit nicely. But yeah, man, these things have been serving me well. I no longer have any Viberg 145s. I have some Renav derbies from Indonesia. Pretty solid. Mine are Horween Chamois.
Chamois?
I still say Chamois. I like that.
We're going to cut in Nick Horween here. Nick, what's it called?
Chamois.
The Renavs are great. A lot of the Indonesian makers have really focused on these in, I'd say, a very cool way.
Ooh, the Monroe ones are pretty good.
Monroe's been doing it a lot and has a lot of fancy heel work going on. Tahura makes a really nice one. Obviously, our guy Rizky at Underhood, who I'm actually hoping to send some leather to make a pair. And like, he can only do half soles on them, which I love because it just ruggedizes everything. Some of the Japanese brands do a great job. The Rolling Dub Trio Coupon, which is like approaching a boot and not quite a shoe, but still a shoe in terms of its height, is just like full chonk attack. I love your Knicks. My choice is their neighbor. My whites, Oxfords, double row stitch down, C461 last, brown dress leather, a half sole, really some of my favorite shoes just to wear ever. It's metaphysical, but I'm like, these are just some of the most fun shoes to wear. They do the same things. They like help you walk and not hurt your feet, but I always just have like a great time when I'm wearing those shoes for some reason. And I like to dress them up. It's like, I like the contrast between this big chonky, you know, especially in that leather, like nice looking shoe, like the shoe that's better than everybody else's, you know, Cole Haans with the Nike soles on them or whatever kind of disasters are happening out there. But they're obviously still this gigantic, heavy, not actual dress shoe, but like you put some nice pants on with them and you keep it like a little workwear-y, but I don't know. They work. I love them. Full recommend.
Yeah, I think the real answer is that a lot of brands are putting out some really good rugged shoes.
Oak Streets are really cool.
Dude, you know what? I have some Oak Streets that I have on order actually. Yeah. For the trench Oxfords, which look really nice. I'm excited to try those out. Yeah, like a lot of places have kind of picked up on this, you know, I hate to say like trend. Not everybody wants to wear boots all year round, and they're like the perfect thing to wear. If you're a boot guy, you're used to wearing boots, you're used to having the, you know, that heft and that support, but like you just need some air blowing on your ankles because maybe you live in New York and it's the summertime and it's just humid and hot and brutal, and I hate it here. Just for August is like the worst month in this region. Rugged Oxfords, that's where it's at. Not Oxfords, but you know what I mean.
Metaphysical Oxfords.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I hope in some small way we're responsible for everybody deciding that it's like boot shoes are the shit, because they are.
Hell yeah.
And I will continue to preach that. All right. Another semi-related question. Full sole or half sole?
That's it? That's just there's nothing.
There's a question mark at the end.
No, I got that from your tone. But just in general?
Just in general. When is each ideal?
For me, it's more of an aesthetic choice. Not everything really works with the half soles. It sometimes can look a little wonky. But on stuff like, on like a chunky derby shoe kind of situation, on like on a Chelsea, I love it on my Benzene Chelseas. But I have the half sole and I have the full sole on Benzene Chelseas. And they're both great. I'm going to say slight edge up to the half soles, because I feel like they just like, especially those Dr. Sole half soles, flex super well and last a long time. I don't know, the full soles are pretty rad too though. I don't really have much of an opinion on this. I think it's a very situational, depends on the use case, depends on what you want your pair of shoes or boots to look like.
I agree with the situational outlook on this. I think that if everything was just on a full sole, we wouldn't even be talking about it and nobody would be upset. But I think that there are, you know, certain boots, certain shoes, certain patterns, and even like a cap toe or not can play into this, where I think that you can get a little bit better and definitely more aggressive kind of overall balance to the silhouette with a half sole. It just provides this like gap between the weight, especially on boots with like big old heels. I think that half soles work really well. There's something about it. You have like defined ends of the shoe in that way. And when you look at them, they look really nice. Yeah, you know, half sole for like upfront flex, especially on something with some thick ass midsoles and insoles. I think it does help. I know it does. I've felt it physically, very physically.
And metaphysically.
Sometimes. All right, one more and let's take a break. This is not related at all. And I don't even know why I'm going to read it. This is from our friend Quentin. Who is the best sales guy and why is it Quentin? He actually refers to himself as Q, which is what we call him. But I feel like this is a leading question and we should discard it. He is really good, though.
I feel like it is a valid question.
It might actually be Q. It could be Q.
I mean, Q is awesome. Great dude. Moderator of our Goodyear Welt. Working at Rivet and Hyde in London. French guy, though. He's French, which is great because whenever we need like to know how to like pronounce a French word, he makes like a little recording and sends it to the group so that we can, you know, end a debate over how to pronounce a French word, which is pretty clutch.
Chamois.
But Q's an awesome dude. I've known Q for a long time, formerly of Crockett and Jones. Yeah, also one time he gave you this like really nice Swedish, like 100% wool Swedish military overshirt.
The greatest shirt I've ever seen in my life.
And then you brought it. It must have, I mean, it's a pretty thick shirt. And you ferried it from London to New York and gave it to me.
That thing is like a Pendleton blanket that you have on your bed, but it's a shirt. And I've carried it all the way to you.
It's an incredible shirt. I love it.
It was terrible.
But things like that in play, it's really hard to not answer Q's question by saying that you're the best Q. Love you, man.
All right. God damn it. We need a break. We'll be right back. More shoe bag. All right, Ticho. So a couple episodes ago, you gave an update on your Grant Stone Pebble Grain Country Derbies, and you did a really good job. I'm continually impressed by those shoes, occasionally impressed by you, and that was one of those moments. So great work. My turn this time, I'm going to be talking about my coffee suede diesel boots on the Vibram Cavity Wedge in the Triple E. Basically, I was talking with Wyatt, and we're talking about my sizing in this pair of Ottawas that I had and ultimately had to get rid of because they just didn't fit quite right. And I was getting all this instep pressure, and they're 10.5D, which is theoretically the right size, and otherwise they fit beautifully, and it was honestly the greatest black Chrome XL that I've ever seen in my life. You know, they didn't do it. And stretch, like none of these things happened, and I kept feeling this pain. And he's like, all right, I think there's something you should try. The diesel boot in Triple E. I'm like, well, what about E? He's like, no, trust me. I really, really think that you're going to like this. So I got them in 10 Triple E, and I absolutely love these things. They are some of the best knock-around boots, walking the dog, doing stuff around the yard. I've immediately gave up on caring about taking care of the suede, and it doesn't matter. You can just wipe them down. Dark suede is great for that. All my lighter suede, like, I love, and I still beat up, and every once in a while you drop, like, a chicken wing on it, and the suede doesn't forget that. But with this dark suede, like, I got some ranch dressing on them a couple weeks ago, and, like, you can't tell. The ride is just so good. Like, I load them up with thick socks. They're incredibly comfortable. Like, you feel like they're a little bigger, but you don't feel like they're crazily big. I was telling Wyatt, like, a lot of people compare the Grant Stone Leo Last to the Alden Berry Last. And I do think that there are some visual similarities to them. But in the way that it can kind of fit your foot even at a wider width without feeling too long, I feel like it's a lot more like the Alden True Balance Last, which I, in the past, have been up to an 11 on, and then was like, I think it's too big. And then I got a smaller one. I'm like, I got to go back to 11. There's just like a lot more kind of play there. I've really, really been digging these things. I've been putting them through it, and they're going to get a ton of wear in the fall. They're not my Thunderdome boots because I've already worn them, but probably be figuring out a way to wear them like 3 or 4 times a week because I rarely wear one pair of boots throughout a day. Sometimes it's 3 or 4, and these will be in the mix.
I mean, those look great, man. You're not selling me on the wedge, but everything else is looking pretty tight there. So congratulations. I'm glad glad that you are enjoying them as much as I'm enjoying my pair.
It's a great pair of boots, and crazy value is with All Grand Stone, and don't worry, I've got a plan to get you on a pair of wedge sole shoes pretty soon. Watch out. Watch out. All right, yeah, everybody go check these guys out and everything else at GrantStoneShoes.com. They come with amazing shoe bags. Clean transition. Back to the shoe bag. All right, we're back. Shoe bag. Next listener question. How do you decide which brand to order from or brands for your like 10th and 11th and 12th pair of boots? You've already gotten started. You played around a little bit. You found some stuff you liked, but you're curious. You want to keep pushing. There's a whole world out there. There's a shoe journey to take. How do you do that?
Well, I think the first thing to do is to kind of look back at where you've been, right? And see what's worked for you, what you like, what you enjoy wearing. What are you wearing all the time? What did you never wear? Take that all information in and kind of look out at the, you know, look out at the spectrum of things that are available to you. Think about what's your budget for this? What's your, what are you looking for? And for me, what I look for is like things that I don't already have. Sometimes that's just like a new leather I've never tried that I think looks cool, or, you know, a small, even like a really small detail that I'm like, you know, it would be cool if I got something with a lineman patch or something like that, you know, and you're
correct.
Then you start thinking about, okay, well, what can I do with that? And where should I go with this? What am I trying to do an MTO? Do I just want to buy from a ready-to-wear collection? Like, you kind of look around and you bring together, you have to kind of synthesize all that information, right? There should be some like conclusions that you can draw about like what you want to add. You know, is there a style that you've been looking to try? Like I mentioned these Clinch engineers that I have coming. I wanted to get more into engineers. I wanted to have a really cool, well-patinaed engineer that I would wear like all the time, have it as like a kind of an everyday boot.
Thunderdome.
Really adapt to that engineer lifestyle. Get some slightly less tapered jeans and stuff like that to accommodate that. You know, you kind of piece together like, where's your wardrobe going? What are you trying to do stylistically? What are you trying to do aesthetically overall? All this stuff is like related to each other. It's interesting how looking through the lens of your footwear, you can kind of take a look at a lot of other aspects of your life and maybe have some self-reflection. I like completely look at my whole life through shoes. Oftentimes we'll just be like, yeah, like things are changing my life. I need something more rugged that I can just beat up. Now I have kids. I need to have something that I don't mind getting messed up. Because my kids are just going to step on my feet, they're going to drop stuff, they're going to barf on them, like, whatever. You can kind of look back at it later and kind of see progression of where you've been on your journey, and it's like an interesting lens for reflecting on your life. Is that a metaphysical answer? I still don't really know what metaphysics is, I'm not going to lie. I've been scrolling the Wikipedia page, but I don't really get it.
I think it takes some time to seep in. Everything you said is right. Like there's a million considerations, so it's actually a pretty tough question to answer. One thing I'll say, all right, 10th, 11th, 12th pair, to kind of counter what you said, if you found a maker and a last that really, really, really fits your foot and they make a whole bunch of stuff in that that you don't have, just consider that. You can still get creative. You can still do something different. You can get a shoe if you have a lot of boots or the other way around. But fit continues to be king. It's fun to explore different brands and different lasts, but every so often, get back into the one that you know works, because you're probably going to end up wearing it a ton. Sorry if that's a boring answer.
I completely agree with that. I think if you found you're super into Trumans, they fit you super well, you're into all the different leathers and all that kind of stuff, and you just want to get like 10 different pairs of Trumans because that's your jam, do that. Don't feel like, oh, I only really like one thing. I need to have this like weird, varied collection and try all this different stuff. Like trying different stuff is great, but if you found something that, you know, really hits it for you, like buy a 12th pair of Trumans, man. Like, why not?
All right. Well, it probably takes somebody with a few pairs of engineer boots to answer this question. And I've thought about this quite a bit too, but return to you, Ticho. What makes the difference between a good engineer boot and a great one if the leather is the same?
For me, the engineer, it comes down to the last. I mean, that's like the most important consideration on an engineer. Anything without laces or, you know, anything like that, you got to get the fit right. So a great engineer is one that fits you really well, I think, first of all. Second of all the other details on engineers, it's like you're kind of splitting hairs a little bit. Talk to our buddy Jake at Almost Vintage Style. He's really the one to ask this question to.
He is. Mr. Style.
I'm sure he could probably write a great article about this and really break it down, because he's the real expert on this. For me, I would say it's about fit, it's about the last, all the other little details. I'm less in the weeds on the other details for an engineer.
I agree. And I also wrote an article about engineer boots and my fear of them and journey towards them and ultimately realizing that they're sweet and I love them. And I thought a lot about this and got some of it into that article. Jake, come and bring it and contradict this, please, any way you wish. The differences are more subtle because it's mostly just leather, right? Yeah, the backstay could have different stitching patterns, and there could be different stitching patterns on, you know, any part of the boot. One thing that I do love, I don't know that this makes a great engineer and that's why you choose it, but on some of the Standard and Strange Mr. Lou's over the years, they have the longer strap, which I think is just kind of fly. And like, especially as it breaks down and starts to get all twisted, it, you know, gives you this different, certainly, you know, less formal, you know, engineer boot's not a terribly formal boot, but less formal, kind of more freewheeling cowboy type look. I actually, you know, this one's huge. I think the heel is really important. I think it's just a major feature on it. You know, they're generally, you don't see a block heel engineer, but, you know, just either the curvature or the slant or whatever it is, I think that's pretty crucial. But yeah, I mean, compared to a lot of boot patterns, while there are differences, I don't know that that's where, you know, the true meaning of a great engineer boot lies. You're right. Like, it's got to fit, doesn't have laces. So you got to dial that in. You got to like the way the last looks when you look down at it. And there's a lot of good options. And you can also see, you know, when you see an engineer boot with a bad last, you know it. Yeah, it's generally from like a more mass brand who, some of them make a lot of great products overall, but they haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about that. And to me, it just, it kills the boot.
That all sounds right. Let's check in with Jake. Jake, now hanging out in the Stitch Sound Premium Discord, by the way. So
Jake's been a great addition.
Yeah,
I love it.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we talk a lot about boots and shoes, but I mean, he's giving everybody tips on leather jackets and like all this stuff. He's a force. Love you, Mr. Style. All right, follow up. Is a Shell Cordovan engineer really necessary? I'm going to say no, and also, why the fuck not? Yes.
You're taking both answers?
Taking both. I mean, like, from like a would the world continue if this didn't exist? There's a lot of boots that I would pick that would, like, if they didn't exist, the world would end before a Shell engineer. But just metaphysically and conceptually, you got to hand it to Nick and Brett, and the boots look good. They do.
On a broader metaphysical sense, I love that Shell engineers exist. Looks incredible. I personally don't want to wear them. Doesn't seem like it would be comfortable. Seems like I'd have kind of a weird sweaty ankle calf area because they're just not really going to breathe very well, and they're not going to flex super well. Like, I've been pretty happy with like two pairs of engineers I've had have been Chrome XL, which I think is like perfect. You know,
it's kind of like the best leather for engineers.
A great leather for an engineer. It's like, it's soft enough to flex, but it's like rugged and tough enough to kind of like be tough. Whereas like Shell, it's not flexing enough. It's just going to be, I think they're a worn in pair of Shell engineers would look absolutely incredible. Possibly one of the most beautiful boots you could probably own. I would never wear them enough to get them to that point. So that would be my hesitation.
I asked Nick Horwing because he has the sample pair. And he's like, honestly, the break-in was not very bad. Like, they flex better than I suspected they would. Like, it's not just some crazy metaphysical science experiment.
That's cool, man. Yeah, I'd love to try them on, check them out.
I don't need any. I really don't need any.
Yeah.
If they showed up, I would definitely, probably, maybe keep them. But, you know, or sell them for $2,000. Like, that would actually be a tough decision if somehow they just appeared on my desk. But I would want to give them a run. I also don't know if I would be in them enough to make it count.
Yeah, I think the perfect midpoint is like a horse butt engineer. It kind of solves for both equations. It gives you everything you want.
Yep.
Without being it's probably uncomfortable.
Yep. I don't know. I'm feeling this CXL. I'm a one engineer guy for now. I'm sure that'll change at some point, but I'm happy. Another engineer question. Just bought some MTO engineers and they're too big. Help. 44E if you know anyone. So we now have listeners trying to sell boots on the shoe bag.
Through the show. We don't have any other info about what the makeup is, though.
No, I mean, they're probably Indonesian, I would imagine, given that they're 44 and...
This is like a, you know, benzene engineer, the keeper.
I might actually want these at 44E. I might get in touch.
Probably a great boot, because I think those look excellent. Hit up our anonymous listener.
I gotta say, he's trying to sell boots. Daniel J.S. Harris on Instagram. Hit him up. 44E. I'm sure they're lovely.
You know, you don't have to ask all the questions that come in the order that they come in on the show, right? Like, you could pick and choose. Like, you didn't have to ask the Q's question about, do we love Q?
I feel like that's actually my exact responsibility as the question solicitor. And, like, if you don't get these questions in early, we're not going to answer them. You better hurry next time you see that.
Oh, wow.
I'm just threatening our listeners now, which I feel great about. Next two are actually a little more technical. And then we got a fun kind of metaphysical one after this. 360 degree welt or 270? I'm saying this is definitely situational, but I also kind of have a personal preference, but I'll let you go.
I like a 270. I think the 270 gives it a little bit of a cleaner look, a little bit of a kind of cleaner profile. I like that unstitched heel. Was it a Rand? I don't know what the fuck it's called.
Could be. I have a friend whose dad's name Rand, just so you're aware.
Is it Rand Paul? Are you friends with Rand Paul's son? Ron Paul's grandson is your friend?
Who? Never heard of him.
Well, that's baffling. But I do like the look of kind of like the unadorned heel, which may or may not be called a Rand. Some people are probably screaming at the whatever they're listening to this on. I think it looks pretty good. I got no beef with a 360. Sometimes that looks cool, too. It's just like, depends what you're trying to do. Like, if you want something a little chunkier, you know, for a while, Viberg was doing these, like, 360 flat welts that just looked super killer.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if they even still do those. Other places, they do the 360, and it doesn't always look right to me. But 270 is almost always pretty good. The one exception to that is, like, sometimes those 270 storm welts, where they're ending that storm well.
They can go a little wrong sometimes.
It can get a little wonky.
There's no kind of clean way to just have it blend into everything else. When you look at them when you're wearing them, it's fine. When you look at them from the side, it can be a little rough sometimes.
Yeah, I would say if you're going for more of like a chunky Stormwell type of look, just do a 360. But
exactly.
Most other things, I think 270 is preferable.
Yeah, I think 270 works great for a flat welt. I mean, 270 is dressier, right? It gives you just slimmer heel profile and all that, and flat welt's dressier. So I think those two match well. I like a 360 a lot of the times just because, you know, even if it's from a maker that they're not nailing the 270 every time out, the 360 is probably going to be pretty clean. And it's got a little extra chonk. It all depends. If you want something dressy, probably don't go 360. All right, so this one actually came up twice in a row because I read these in order. What's the best storage solution for boots? I feel like we might have done this before, but multiple people asked it, so we should do it again.
I like to have my boots out where I can see them because I'm a visual person. Like, if I put something back in a box, it's basically dead to me. I might never have developed object permanence is what I'm thinking about right now. So I like to have them out. I have them on a shelf here in my basement dungeon office, so I can look at them. And I can come down here and kind of like peruse it, almost like I'm in, yeah, like my little shoe store down here, and, you know, pick out like, oh, what do I want to wear today? So that's what I like to do. I know lots of people who keep them in the boxes to keep them, you know, everything looking real pristine. I know people who have one of those like plastic bins, you know what I mean? Like, they've got the plastic bins that slide under the bed and they're just full of the boots, and then they slide them out in the morning. I don't like the hanging on the door, you know what I mean? The things that hang on the door, because then you like...
I still have like a lot of my old like running sneakers, which I've never run in, are hang on the back of a closet door and you can't really
see.
Yeah,
I'm not
but
a fan
it
of that.
Keeps them out of the way. It's efficient. It's very efficient. Yeah. As efficient as shoe storage gets.
I mean, look, if you are living in Brooklyn or something and you don't have a lot of room, like, store them in the most efficient way possible. If you're like me and you live in the suburbs, put them on a shelf or something so you can see them would be my recommendation.
Yeah, I'm like lucky enough in my office that there was just like a blank wall. So like built some shoe shelves and they hold shoes. And originally it was like, oh, I'm looking up pictures of like the Carmina shop and I want like this kind of wood and I want to angle it and all that. And eventually I was like, no, it's great. Like you can see them. You don't forget about them. You just want to look at them. Like I do video calls in front of them. It's pretty fun.
It's a really solid Zoom background for you. Because mine are not behind me here in the office. They're, like, next to me. So I have to, like, angle my laptop so that people can see that I'm not just in a normal basement. I'm in a shoe basement. You know what I mean? But you just have it right there. You're set up and ready to go.
Everything was based around how when people walk in, are they like, why the fuck do you have so many shoes? And then they usually just leave at that point. But at least they saw the shoes, too. But yeah, other shelving solutions, like there's stuff that you can get. There are all sorts of racks. Like the problem is that most shoe racks that you get on Amazon or like whatever store sells shoe racks for $25, they're not made for boots, which is a problem. So you only have one row that you can put boots on for the most part. There's other solutions. In the Discord, we were actually talking about this the other day and a bunch of people shared like specific products that they had bought off Wayfair. A couple of them that, you know, are kind of this like nice, it's like a shelf and there's drawers. I don't really know furniture terms, but it's definitely a piece of furniture. And like they were perfect for fitting three pairs, you know, side by side, not even quite touching each other. So I should probably put together a little article on that and like corral a few more of these. But yeah, I mean, if you got dress shoes, the one thing too on those low racks, which like use them for sneakers, they don't matter. Not that I wear sneakers, but I do have a bunch hiding behind a door. When you pull out your shoes and you're going to put like your nice dress shoes on those bottom racks where the boots can't fit, they're kind of tight and they can kind of get caught and mine are slatted. So like it's like getting caught when you pull it out, which like I don't love, you know, you feel like you're not treating them quite right, but you can stack them on top of each other and like there are some benefits to them. Just get some pieces of wood and put up some shelves and they don't have to look beautiful because the shoes are going to put a little stain on them. Like it's not that tough if you can. And then, like, you know, they're ringing the floor, like, they're kind of everywhere. Figure out a way to lobby for as many shoes right by the door as you possibly can with whoever you live with. That's always really helpful.
What are your pairs that you leave by the door?
I've got, what do I have? I always have a pair of Chelsea boots right by the door. In the winter, it's these Jim Greens, which are great in the snow. I have my Tangier by Leadberry Kudu ones there today. The Grant Stone Chelseas I have, which I really like, are like a little dressier, so they're not like a toss them on to go do the garbage type thing. I generally have a pair of Viberg 145s up there in case I want to throw those on and just rip the laces and go. I have my Viberg slip-on sneakers up there at all times, and I'll just admit it, I got a pair of Birkenstock Bostons, like the shoe ones, right there, and that's it. And then eventually my wife's like, you're only allowed to have two pairs of shoes under this bench right by the door, and you know, for like 3 days, I'll have two pairs, and then they'll all make their way back up there.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, your wife a little bit more understanding than mine, or you just have a bigger foyer than I do.
It's like, it's got to be like a 6-foot bench, so it could probably fit 7 or 8 pairs of shoes. There's like kid shoes down there.
Yeah, your bench is bigger than mine. We had to get like a custom small bench to fit in our little foyer. So I only have, I try to keep it to 2 as well. And if I don't, my wife will just kind of like chuck them in some random place. And then I like forget that they even exist and I lose them for months at a time. But usually my move is I got brown wax flesh benzene Chelseas to just slip on and go do stuff. And then like a pair of Hansones. Right now it's been my Alden Leisure Hansones in snuff suede that I've just been like beating the heck out of all summer. It's just been the shoe that I've been wearing. So those have been living there. We have this like little cabinet. It's like a dry sink, which is like a sink that doesn't have any water, but it doesn't look like a sink. It just looks like a piece of furniture. So I don't really know. I don't really know why it's called a sink. I don't really see where the sink part comes in. That's what it's called. My wife bought it at an antique store. It's cool. It's nice.
Okay.
And inside, there's usually all the other shoes that I've just, like, left near the door at some point. Like, I think my flame pandas are in there right now. Some Rancorts in there. There's my quaddies are in there. I got some main mocks, lazy mocks in there. Probably some Oak Street camp mocks. And then I have another pair of Oak Street camp mocks I keep by the back door for when I need to go pick up my dog's poop in the backyard.
There we have it. Sometimes I do have some handstones up there. Some Rancorts or these old Sperrys, which are actually made by Rancort. Sorry if I wasn't supposed to say that, Sperry or Rancort, but they're fantastic. And I believe in them deeply. All right. Two-tone boots, yes or no?
I'm going to say in general, no. I have not historically been a big fan of two-tone boots. I just feel like find one leather that works and stick with that. You know, don't overthink it. Don't overdo it. It gets pretty tricky trying to like match leathers together, especially when you're like mixing different tanneries, different, you know, one's a suede, one's a shell, you know, something like that. It's like, I feel like most two-tone boots would be improved by just picking one of the leathers and sticking with that for the whole boot. That's just generally been my kind of preference. Having said that, I've seen some pretty dope two-tone boots that...
Aha! At this point, I'm pretty sure I don't have any two-tone boots. I did have a pair from Peng that were blackberry waxed flesh monkey boots, and the toe was brown waxed flesh. So it was fairly subtle. Like, they're both pretty dark, definitely not the same color, but you might not even grasp it at first, really. And I thought that worked well, but I felt like it wasn't really going far enough. One of my biggest regrets is my Cigar Accordmaster monkey boots, which are some of the best monkey boots you can buy, one of my favorite pairs of boots. I didn't get, like, the patch two-tone, and some people have done that. I think even the same leather as mine, you know, which is pretty dark. It's, like, black overdyed olive Badalassi. And then you put, like, a natural patch on the side, and the contrast is really cool. And then our boy Brandon from the Discord, who I'm pretty sure is going to wear these in the Thunderdome, got that look. But then the backstay is also natural.
Mm.
They look good, and you just can't wait to see them in 7 months as that gets a little darker, but it's still different. There's something to them. Division Road has done some great whites and Wesco two-tones that wanted to make a move on and just didn't, and in some ways have regretted it. But yeah, I think it's tough. It's tough to get it really, really right. I will say I got these Viberg 145s from like 7 or 8 years ago, secondhand, barely worn, monster shoe, absolutely love them. And they were two-tone, and I was like, I don't know about this whole two-tone thing, but I want these shoes. I know that they're going to be really cool and just like a piece of history. And dude, I love them. I think that they're so fun. They kind of feel like a little more like a sneaker, despite weighing the equivalent of like 700 sneakers a piece. But you can also like class them up a little bit with some chinos and just be like the funky dude. I don't know. I'm going in that direction. You know, for like collaboration stuff, I've frankly never even considered it, and I kind of want to.
Yeah, I think you hit on the key point, which is it just increases the degree of difficulty of, especially if you're doing like an MTO pair, to try to get two leathers to kind of work together and work with the design. And if you have like a real clear vision for what that is, then go for it. But if you're just kind of like, I don't know, maybe I'll do a two-tone, you know, and you don't really have like a vision for what it's going to look like, I think that's just the recipe for maybe just something that looks a little off. That it's hard. Yeah, I think it's trickier. I'm just not ready for it in a metaphysical sense, I think. Still don't really know what metaphysics is, but let's keep referencing it.
Man, there's too many good questions. We might have to transition to an all shoe bag season next season, which would probably end this podcast. But they're good every once in a while, right? Last question, Ticho. Where exactly does horse butt come from?
From a horse's butt, right?
I think it's a trick question.
Is this like a Grant's Tomb situation?
Exactly.
Is that not just the answer, that it comes from a horse's butt?
Here's what I'm going to proffer. It comes from a tannery.
Oh, this is like one of the...
Right? It's not a very good trick question, but...
This is like one of those questions my dad would repost on Facebook and be like, I didn't get it right, so I had to repost it.
we need to start like a chain letter with this question. Like, it seems so easy that it actually turns into a baffler.
What was the exact wording of the question?
Where exactly does horse butt come from? Doesn't really change anything. Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe exactly is like the key word
exactly.
Here.
Exactly. See, now I'm like...
Horse butt is all one word.
Yeah, see, we've been all up in these like metaphysical answers today, so I'm like, is there a broader meaning to this than just it comes from a horse's butt?
I got one. Might be Europe, where they have horse burgers, right?
Well, we learned in a Gen Fact that it's like some of them come from like mares that are raised for their urine or something. Was that a Gen? I don't know. That might have been an incorrect Gen Fact.
I remember every Gen Fact. I don't think that was a Gen Fact.
That might have just been something I was looking at on the internet. Yeah.
Whenever we figure out what the answer to this is, we're going to need to fucking lie down for a little bit because it's going to be a hitter. Oof. All right. We'll just let everybody think about that. If you have answers to where exactly does horse butt come from, just DM me at Stitchdown and make them good. Make them really good. Maybe I'll even post this.
Again, if you have any resources for me to understand metaphysics, please DM me as well at Teacher Blanco Shoes.
All metaphysicists, get after Teacher. But all right, look, that's it. No more questions. Shoebag is closed. Huge thanks to Grant Stone for sponsoring this episode and just making fantastic shoes and boots at an unfathomably reasonable price. And consider going Tripoli. I'm serious. And remember that the Thunderdome sign-up page is now open today on stitchdown.com to get a shot at all those prizes and just have a ton of fun. Join the Stitchdown Premium community, which is just the best place anyway. Hit that entry page and don't dare wear your boots until October 1st. Patina Turner will be so proud of you. That's it for this week. Take care of your shoes. We'll see you next time.